Matalan sale is now on. Save up to 50% off hundreds of styles right across the store, from women's and menswear to kids and home too. But hurry, it won't be around for long. Shop the sale in-store, online at matalan.co.uk or via the app now.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty, and we have a lot to talk about as we go into week 9 of the college baseball season. It's a busy week around the SEC this week. You know, last week we didn't spend as much time talking SEC baseball. We'll fix that this week. We'll get into a couple of pretty big series in the Big 12, as we talked about last week. That is suddenly a fascinating conference. We'll hit on some stuff in the ACC and the Pac-12 as well, probably. And we'll also get to some Big East baseball, which is not a thing that we've talked about on this podcast probably in a couple of years. But this is the year of the Big East. But Peter, let's get into the SEC here. Last weekend, there are a number of things that happened last weekend within the conference. You know, you had Kentucky sweeping Alabama. That was pretty notable. A&M went on the road and won a nice series against South Carolina. Vandy did the same at LSU. But I think the biggest thing coming out of last weekend was Missouri sweeping Florida. And as much as I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time dissecting Florida's problems again, when that happens, I do think that we have to sit up and take a little bit of notice, because the thing about Florida for so long was, like, okay, they have these weird losses, but like, look at all these quality wins that they keep picking up. And they hadn't lost a weekend series. Like, technically, like, opening weekend goes down as a series loss, but they lost once to St. John's and then the rest of it got rained out. This was different. This was going on the road to Missouri and getting swept in a pretty bad way. On Friday night, they lost in extra innings, but they only had two hits. Saturday was a relatively straightforward loss. And then Sunday, they got down early. Jack Heglione got knocked out early. They make up that deficit, take a lead, and then can't hold the lead and get walked off on. And the whole ninth inning was just something that Florida needs to forget about as soon as it possibly can. Missouri, you know, they were the worst team in the SEC coming in, by record and also by reputation. By reputation, they still would be regarded that way, but they have just as many SEC wins now as Alabama. Columbia is a really difficult place to play at times, especially when it's cold. It was really cold, especially on Friday night. That being said, though, like, I don't think there's any way that you can look at this and just say, like, okay, moving on. Like, I think this is a real serious situation for Florida that was compounded when it got absolutely routed on Tuesday night in Tallahassee.
Yeah, as you mentioned, up until that point, Florida was and still is one of the weirder teams to try and get a handle on, but they were winning when it mattered. Like, they had a lot of puzzling and head-scratching results on midweeks, but when all was said and done, like, they were winning when it mattered. So, like, their issues, I think, were a little bit buried in that and almost ignored. And then this weekend and on Tuesday, they reared its ugly head. And I think that now is, I think, officially time to be worried about Florida, not when it comes to making the NCAA tournament quite yet, but like, it's gut check time for them. Because as you mentioned, last night was kind of the culmination of what had been a really rough 5-day stretch. And they punted that game by like the third or the fourth inning, but still, going on the road and getting throttled by your rivals in 19-4 fashion is, and especially off that weekend, like, if you came out and you notched and like, they couldn't have started better last night. Cade Curlin and Caglione hit back-to-back home runs. And if they had gone out last night and notched a really big top 10 win on the road, albeit in a midweek heading into a series with South Carolina, like, you know, that's huge. And now you have, and looking at this weekend, you have two teams now kind of going in opposite directions. South Carolina got a really nice 2-1 win over UNC last night or on Tuesday night. after salvaging the series on Sunday against A&M. So they're riding some momentum into this weekend, whereas Florida is going in the absolute opposite direction. And I feel like this is a series that Florida really needs for a lot of reasons. Like, they're sitting here right now at 6-6 in the SEC. The SEC East is a cluster right now, and they're tied with South Carolina. And I think that, and Georgia's right on its heels at 5-7, and even Missouri is still lurking at 4-8. I don't know how much of an issue they'll be long-term, but this feels like a series that Florida really needs, because after this, they go to Vanderbilt, they go to Arkansas, and they host Tennessee. And the sledding is a lot tougher. So, I think this weekend is serious gut check time.
The crazy thing about Florida, you know, usually with an SEC or an ACC team, I just kind of say like, whatever your overall record is, it doesn't really matter. What matters is your conference record. And that's true almost every single time, because most of these teams have gaudy non-conference records. And, you know, that you look at Ole Miss, or actually that's a bad example, but Alabama, 4-8 in the SEC, but they're 22-11 overall. Like, who cares? Like, just win enough SEC games and nobody's going to look at your overall record. But Florida is now 17-15, and that actually matters. Like, you still have to have a winning record. Like, that is part of the whole thing. And Florida's now like trending dangerously close to not having that. Like, the problems are the same problems that they've been, that we've gone over so many times. They didn't pitch well enough this weekend. Caglione had been quite good on the mound this year. They had not lost a game he had started before Sunday. He ultimately wasn't the reason they lost, but also wasn't really, he didn't help himself any. He got like four outs for them. Friday, it was the weirdest thing, that like the offense just didn't show up. And that's becoming a little bit more of an issue, that this offense has, like, last year they were one of the better lineups in the country 1-9. This year they're not that. And so as their pitching has struggled, like, the offense is good, but not elite. And that's starting to show up a little bit more often. But yeah, like you said, Peter, it's gut check time. Like, they are back at home this weekend. They're playing South Carolina. Both teams really need it, kind of for different reasons. Like, Florida needs to stop this from snowballing, and South Carolina maybe can look at this as like, well, maybe this is a chance to get Florida. And South Carolina, like, as they were in the aftermath of them beating UNC last night in Charlotte, I was, you know, we published the projected field of 64 on Wednesday morning. So, like, I make late tweaks to it sometimes. And that was a tweak that I really had to resist, was putting South Carolina back on the host line. Like, I had moved them off. After they beat UNC, I really wanted to, but they have to win SEC games. They're a team, they're like, I don't care what their overall record is. I care what their SEC record is. And they need SEC wins. And this weekend suddenly feels like maybe it's a chance to get a couple.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with Florida, like you said, the issues are still the same. I think while the pitching has gotten kind of the brunt of the criticism, and rightfully so, like, the freshmen are fresh. Like, I think they have a really good crop of freshmen, and it's going to turn into one of the better pitching staffs potentially in 25 or 26. But they're relying on these guys heavily for pretty big time workloads. And, you know, their age or lack thereof is showing, which has been an issue. And then also the lineup, I think, is outside of Caglione and Ty Evans. I mean, it's looked not really scary at times. And I think they're a little bit too reliant on the long ball. Like, they've 1-9, anyone in there can drive the ball all over the yard. But the issue has been moving the baseball consistently, putting the ball in play, stringing together quality at bats. And outside of Caglione and Ty Evans, it's been a little bit of a struggle at times. And they have a ton of talent there too. Like, Colby Shelton's a really good player. Tyler Shelnut has stepped up this year to an extent. Cade Curlin's a good player. Like, they have guys there, and they obviously lost a lot from last year, but they do have what it takes to turn it around to an extent, I think. But time is, like, we're now in the middle of April. There are only six weekends left. Like, there's only so much time where you can, like, actually turn this thing around. So this weekend's a big one.
Elsewhere in the SEC last weekend, like I said, Kentucky swept Alabama. And Peter, you mentioned the SEC East as a cluster, except for Alabama, or except for Kentucky, which is 11-1 now. Their pitching dominated the Tide this weekend. Dominic Niemann threw a shutout on Saturday, but like all three games, Kentucky's pitching just silenced a pretty good lineup from Alabama. And Kentucky's never been 11-1 in the SEC before. They are rocking. And like, you can look at the schedule still and say like, well, you know, who have they really played? And like, that's fine. They still have 11 SEC wins. This is a program that's not like they miss the NCAA tournament sometimes, and they're already basically positioned in a point where they're not going to, and they're already strongly positioned to host, and they can start thinking about being a top eight seed. They haven't won the SEC East, like, I think once. They've won the SEC East once. They've never been a top eight seed before. Like, all of these things are on the table right now, and I don't know how the second half of the SEC season is going to play out for the Cats. It probably won't be another, 11 wins. If it does, like, oh boy, do we have like the best story in college baseball to talk about. But where they're at right now is really impressive, and what they accomplished over the weekend, especially on the mound. It was a really big weekend for Kentucky.
Without a doubt. And I think it's a pretty, in today's day and age, at least of college baseball, I think it's a pretty old fashioned team. Like, it's pitching and defense that lead the way. Like, they have weapons in the lineup, and they have a handful of really good bats, but their 3.42 team ERA is third in the SEC. They're fifth in the SEC in fielding percentage. And in typical Kentucky and Coach Mingione fashion, I think this year a little bit more than other years, just given the personnel that they have, they really push the pace and put pressure on teams offensively on the base paths. Like, they're not afraid to play small. Like, their 72 stolen bases, I think, lead the SEC. And they also have 21 sack bunts, which also leads the SEC. And the pitching staff, like you mentioned, Dominic Niemann was a huge piece that came over from Central Connecticut State. Mason Moore, I think, is not only a sneaky draft prospect, but also someone who's been performing at a really high level. Charleston transfer Trey Pooser has been used in a number of roles. And then there's a bevy of guys in the bullpen, too, that they're really comfortable going to. And I think it's a really experienced, well-rounded team with kind of a collective slow heartbeat, and that plays really, really well in its favor. And like you said, they have not gone through a gauntlet of a schedule, but going to Swayze Field and sweeping Ole Miss in that fashion, sweeping a really good, really good to an extent, Alabama team in also dominant fashion is really impressive. And then, like, looking ahead as well, they don't have a crazy gauntlet of a schedule like that. The April 19th through first week of May stretch, where you go Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, is the closest thing they have. But outside of that, there are a lot of winnable series, both given who they're matched up with and then also, the talent that they have. And like you said, I think that they'd kind of have to play themselves out of a hosting spot at this point, and they're also like a top eight national seed is certainly not out of the question. I think they're probably in that range right now if the season ends today. So it's a really fun club.
Like you said, they just play a different style of offense, and their pitching staff is right. Like, there's Arkansas, there's A&M, and then Kentucky. Like, those are the clear, like, two best pitching staffs right now, I would say, in the league. And maybe you can even argue about A&M, but like, there's Arkansas, and then I do think that A&M's probably above everybody else, but Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, kind of take your pick from there. And like, the fact that they have a pitching staff at that level is huge. I mean, like, the way that they go about things on the mound, they obviously have their distinctive offensive style. Peter, you mentioned that they lead the SEC in stolen bases and sack bunts. They have 21 sacrifice bunts this year. Do you know how many Tennessee has?
Good question. I'm going to, because you're asking it, I'm going to assume it's egregiously low. So I'll say 4.
It's 0.
I was close to saying 0.
It's 0. But yeah, so like that's, it's just a different deal. But, you know, I think that what Dan Rozelle does with that pitching staff, Kentucky's pitching coach, they've been at a high level for a while. This seems like maybe their best group. We'll see how well it holds up over the course of a season. They've had other good groups, but this certainly is up there. And they know what they're doing offensively. Everyone is bought in. Like, they are all bought into playing that way. And it's working for them. So, yeah, I don't know where this is going to end up for Kentucky. But I think it's going to be a fun May/June in Lexington. Elsewhere in the SEC, this weekend, you have a couple other intriguing series in addition to Vanderbilt and A&M and South Carolina and Florida. You've got Arkansas going to Alabama. And in the wake of that Alabama sweep, they also lost on Tuesday to South Al. They've lost 5 of their last 6, and now they have to contend with Arkansas. Now, the good news for Alabama is that they get to do that in Tuscaloosa, where they are way better than they are on the road. But it's still Arkansas. So this is a big weekend for the Tide, because if they take a series loss here, it is setting them up for needing a big second half of SEC play. And, we'll see. Arkansas comes in as hot as anybody. And then you also have Mississippi State going to Ole Miss. Always a fun one. Gut check, to say the least, for Ole Miss, which is now 3-9 in SEC play. They really, really need this. And it's a big opportunity for Mississippi State, which got a nice series win against Georgia over the weekend as well.
Yeah, a couple of really big ones. I think there are a couple, a couple more big ones as well, but I'm kind of honed in especially on Alabama and Arkansas. Alabama, as you said, they really need it. Like, they've lost 4 in a row. They got swept at Kentucky. Like you said, they lost on Tuesday night to South Alabama. And now they're 4-8 in the SEC. They're staring down a 2-week stretch of home against Arkansas and home against A&M. So the two of the top 3 teams in the country. And like you said, they play exceptionally well at home, or at least exceptionally better than they do on the road. But Arkansas is, like, they might be the exception to the home road splits, just given how well they pitch. There are 0 holes on that pitching staff. The Alabama lineup is still imposing, but it's come back down a little bit to earth in the last couple of weeks. It's really hard to pick against the Razorbacks right now in any series, and especially this weekend. So, the Tide after this weekend could be at best 5-10 in SEC play, and their position gets a lot more precarious after that. And then, like you said, I echo it all with Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Should be an unbelievable environment. I think I saw on social media that the entire weekend series is already sold out. Like, the environment is in that series is one of the best in college baseball, and it is going to be extremely, extremely hostile for Mississippi State. And no matter what the record, like, I'm going to use a rivalry cliche here, but I don't really care. No matter what the records are of these two teams, whenever they play, no matter who anyone has, like, it's going to be a really competitive series. And I think that Ole Miss is fortunate to have it at home, because they've lost 7 in a row. And like you said, if they lose this one, it's going to be a pretty tough hole to dig out of when it comes to the postseason and getting into the field of 64. So those are two really important ones.
You got to throw the records out. That's what Peter
said. Yeah, you got to throw the records out. Whatever. Any other cliche. Yeah.
I think the other series that Peter was kind of referencing is being very intriguing is LSU going to Tennessee. LSU took a tough series loss against against Vanderbilt over the weekend. And that was a tough really tough one. They now have to go on the road to Tennessee. Tennessee is not, like, we have them fifth. Do you actually feel that good about them? Or fourth. We have them fourth. Vanderbilt's fifth. They just haven't quite been the same without AJ Russell. They're winning games, but it's not. I'm still looking for Tennessee to hit another gear. Is I guess where I'm coming from. And I don't know that that's going to, you know, LSU has its own problems, but like we haven't talked a ton about Tennessee without AJ Russell. AJ Causey has gotten hit around a little bit the last couple of weeks. I'm interested to see what this weekend brings for both of those teams.
Yeah, I think for LSU, like it's getting not as hard to deem a series a must win, and I don't know if it's like you can quite stamp this weekend as much like LSU has to have this series. I don't know if you can do that yet, but like hypothetically, if they come out of Knoxville with another series loss, they're 4-11 in the SEC at best. Now their schedule does get a little bit more forgiving after this, where they go to Missouri, which I guess has proven to be not as easy of a series win as it might be on paper, but I do feel confident.
Still easier than going to Starkville or Knoxville.
Right.
Or Fayetteville.
So they go to Missouri and host Auburn, which to me,
those two are must win. Must win.
Oh, 100%. And those two look like series wins on paper. So if they can go into Knoxville and get a series win, like this is a perfect time for them to build up some momentum and be playing their best baseball at the most important time of the year. And like similar to Florida, the problems for LSU are the same as when we referenced them however long ago. Like the lineup outside of Tommy White and Jared Jones and Hayden Travinsky has struggled to produce at times. The pitching staff outside of Gage Jump, Luke Coleman, and guys like Kate Anderson and Griffin Herring, and maybe a couple of others, it's also been very inconsistent and gotten hit around. Like they just don't have the depth that they do last year, and that was going to be an impossible ask just given the personnel that they had to replace, and it was irreplaceable. But they've certainly taken a step back, so this weekend feels like an important one. And circling back to Tennessee a little bit, when you look at the team on the surface, 27-6, 7-5 in the SEC, number four team in the country, like it's a pretty rock solid resume. But when you look at how they've gotten there, they haven't necessarily like cruised to series wins and like really stepped on teams' throats. They dropped a game against Georgia and Ole Miss. The Georgia series was a particularly like grinded out series type of win. They dropped the series opener at Auburn last weekend. And I think, like you said, like they really do need AJ Russell back, because the lineup, I'd put that lineup against any team in the country, 1-9, like everyone in that order can hurt you. Everyone can drive the baseball. But then when you switch gears to the pitching staff, Drew Beam has been kind of Drew Beam, for lack of better phrasing. Like he's just been really solid and steady on Friday nights. AJ Causey, I think, is a really good arm and gives you a very unique look, especially as a starter. He's a sidewinder, but he's gotten hit around. AJ Russell, like they just need him to get healthy. I think that increases the ceiling of this team drastically, and they've really relied heavily on Nate Snead to carry the workload, almost as a little bit of a second starter. So I think that they are certainly an offensive heavy team. And this series, I think, is it is not as much of a cakewalk for Tennessee as it might appear. Like I think it's going to be a really good series.
It is now that I realize we didn't actually talk Vanderbilt A&M, which I referenced, and then we just kind of moved off. So let's get into that top five series. Vanderbilt has, you know, they go on the road last week. They go to LSU. They lose on Thursday night, and they bounce back. They win the next two. The LSU series was a little bit series of tale of two halves of a series, in which LSU won the first half and then Vanderbilt won the second half, and that came with the series win. Their rotation has been a little off kilter since the South Carolina rainout happened. They haven't had Fittrell in the rotation the last 2 weeks. I'll be interested to see what they do in College Station, how they line this up. But this is still a really good pitching team. They found a good offensive mix. And then they're going up against what is, like, look, Arkansas's pitching staff is far and away the best in the country. They defended at an exceptional level, but their lineup is not as good as those other two phases. A&M, like, I don't know if it's crazy to say this, they feel like maybe the most complete team in the country. And now you have to go to College Station. So it's going to be a really tough series. It's going to be a really fun series. A lot of stars on both sides. I mean, I think this is just a weekend to enjoy as a neutral. If you're Vanderbilt, it's going to be tough to go in there and get a series win. It's really, really hard to win series on the road in the SEC this year, especially when you're playing the high-end teams. But that does put a little bit of pressure on A&M to find a way to hold serve and get this series win at Bluebell Park.
Yeah, it's definitely the series of the weekend. Like you said, it's a top five clash. And the point you brought up about A&M being one of the most complete, if not the most complete teams in the country, I think it's totally valid. Like, you look up and down the lineup, there's depth everywhere. You have star power with Braden Montgomery and Jace LaViolette, even Gavin Grahovic, a true freshman to an extent. And it's this melting pot of returners and experienced guys and transfers. It's just such a well-balanced unit that can hurt you in so many ways. Like, there is not anyone 1 through 9 that I think you can have kind of underlined as an easy at bat. And then you kind of switch gears to the pitching staff. And that 1-2 punch of Ryan Prager and Justin Lampkin has just been exceptional. Prager's having a career year. He's 6-0 with a 2.3 ERA, 63 Ks to 5 walks. And I think outside of Arkansas, like, it's probably the best pitching staff in the SEC, I'd say. One of the best pitching staffs in the country. I think as of yesterday, they were number 2 in team ERA, and there are just so many weapons everywhere in the bullpen and the rotation. Like, there is not a bad arm on that staff. And then when you look at Vanderbilt, I think they need Carter Holton to continue to throw the ball really well. Like, he has looked really, really good since that March 1st start against Louisiana Lafayette, and he's kind of looked like Carter Holton again. And if he can set the tone with a really good start on Friday night, I think that's the key, because if they drop the series opener, it is going to be a million times more difficult to come away with a series win. And they're also a really deep team. Like I said, the lineup for Vanderbilt has kind of been the main story since opening weekend. Like, they've always been such a pitching heavy team, and it's always been pitching with Vanderbilt. And it is a little bit this year to an extent, but they have a really deep lineup, which I think is really impressive and is going to serve them really well. And the best story on that pitching staff, both from a prospect standpoint and then also helping out Vanderbilt, has been Bryce Cunningham. He's really emerged as a junior. So this is going to be a clash of the Titans and a true heavyweight fight. It's hard to not give the edge to A&M at home, though.
Yeah, the emergence of Cunningham has been critical, and you might actually see him on Friday night. Like, I truly don't know how they're going to line this thing up. They got off kilter and Cunningham pitched last Friday. But there is some belief that Holton is eventually going to return to Friday. So who knows? But the emergence of Bryce Cunningham, you know, he's a guy that's now getting first round buzz. You know, it's a power look. Something that's just totally different than what Holton does. So, like, if you have those 1-2 on back-to-back days, that really makes some things difficult for hitters to make an easy adjustment against. The Vanderbilt bullpen, again, we've talked about this before, but the youth that they have out there has really stepped up. Chris McIlvain on Friday night against LSU, I mean, like, a lot of things won them that game, but McIlvain throwing 3 1/3 to finish it in his SEC debut, because he had been starting on midweeks. That was it. To do that as a freshman in the box in that spot. Like, that was massive for them. And I, you know, we'll see how they use him going forward. But, you know, as the season continues, you figure that he's going to throw more and more high leverage innings. And certainly by the time the postseason comes, you know, you're not using midweek starters in the NCAA tournament. So to have that option out of the bullpen really feels like it would be a big impact for Vanderbilt going forward.
Yeah, it's huge. And their freshmen are kind of the polar opposite of Florida's freshmen, where they're pitching like, you know, experienced juniors and experienced seniors. And, you know, they just, like Ethan McElvain, like you said, going to Alex Box, like, that is, like, he's got some cajones on him. Like, that's big time. And then you also throw in guys like Ryan Ginther and Miller Green with sub-1 ERAs. Brendan Sieber's been a key piece. It's just, you know, there's depth everywhere. And I'm really curious to see how each of these teams look against one another, because I think, you know, it's going to be a really good barometer this week, and it's just such a fascinating matchup on a lot of levels.
All right. Well, we'll certainly be watching everything in the SEC very closely this weekend. It's time to move on, though, and we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk some Big 12 baseball.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The big Matalan sale is now on. Save up to 50% off hundreds of styles right across the store, from women's and menswear to kids and home too. But hurry, it won't be around for long. Shop the sale in-store, online at matalan.co.uk or via the app now.
All right, so last week, the big story in the Big 12 was the Bedlam series. Oklahoma State winds up winning it at home, taking 2 out of 3 from the Sooners. The Oklahoma State continues its ascent. Oklahoma, as we talked about previously, going the other way right now. That was a tough weekend for the Sooners, but you know, it was just kind of more the same for Oklahoma State. They went out, they got some good offense. They didn't pitch it at the same level that they'd been pitching it. You know, at home they find a way. They get enough out of their bullpen. They get enough offense, and they go out and they win what was a really fun rivalry series that was, I think, it wasn't sold out quite all weekend, but they drew like 22,000 fans for this one. It was a great atmosphere from what I could tell on TV.
Yeah, an outstanding atmosphere, and I think a perfect end, at least for the modern day Bedlam series. But I was kind of waiting for Oklahoma State to be thrown into a weekend like this. I think on a much lesser degree than I'm kind of waiting for Arkansas to have to deal with a weekend like this. When their pitching doesn't have it, especially ace Brian Holiday, they go out and kind of get punched in the mouth in that game. But, you know, the bats this weekend, you know, they stepped up around a pitching staff that struggled. And I thought that was huge when it speaks to the longevity of this Oklahoma State club and how kind of bought in I've become on them, I guess. Recently, like, it is still a pitching led team, and I'm not worried about the pitching reverting. Like, Sam Garcia and Brian Holiday, like, that is I mean, that might be the best 1-2 punch in the Big 12, and that, you know, that says something. And they also have some nice pieces in the bullpen. But the lineup is, you know, they've swung it well, especially last weekend with Earhart, Benj, Miola, and Richie. Like, I think the fact that they can pitch it as well as they can, and you supplement that with a little bit of depth that they have offensively, like Nolan Schubart coming back is huge. And there are a lot of nice pieces around him. Like, I think that this is a very dangerous team come June, especially that they can pitch it so well.
I am like all the way bought in on them again. And, you know, I like them a lot in the preseason. They had a slow start. It sure seems like they've figured it out. And I really think that they're moving in the right direction. Oklahoma is interesting still. Like, they're a confusing, team. They're 18-14. They have the number one strength of schedule. They're 8-4 in the Big 12, but they've now lost three straight series. You know, the sweep at home against Lamar, bookended by series losses to West Virginia and Oklahoma State. I don't really know what to expect from them moving forward. They just haven't been able to piece things together right on the mound lately. They have some nice options, but they just have not been able to figure that piece of it out, like how the rotation, how the bullpen fits together best. And until they do that, it seems like they're gonna have some problems. Now, what went wrong there is, you know, like they were rolling so well and now they're not. Like, it's just a little bit hard to figure out how you get it back on the tracks. But that is the task that Skip Johnson has in front of him now. And they got Kansas State at home this week. And, you know, K-State took a tough series loss at UCF last week. But this is still a pretty good Kansas State team, and one that if you aren't pitching if your pitching isn't ready, if it's not at the top of its game, this Kansas State offense is going to hurt you.
Yeah, it's a really big series for the Sooners to get back on track. And in the Big 12 with just the parity in it, I don't think it's parity with a lot of teams being below average or bad. I think it's a lot of teams actually being really solid and tough to beat. Like, any series could go any which way. It just so happens for the Sooners that they have one of the better, potentially the one of the best teams in the Big 12 this weekend. And like you said, it's been tough to kind of put your finger on, like, okay, like, here's where it's gone wrong for Oklahoma in the last few weeks. Like, they haven't really pitched at a very high level, but I still like the pieces they have on that pitching staff between Braden Davis, Kyson Witherspoon now, who's starting, and Brendan Gurton. And I also like the lineup with the guys that they have. It's like, I still like the bones of the team. They've just got to go out and show it. And I think if they can respond this weekend with a series win against Kansas State, that'd be huge, because they can't let it snowball too far out of control. I still think they're comfortably in the tournament right now. Like you said, like you posted this morning, they're currently a 2 seed. Like, they're not in danger of missing the tournament yet, but they can't let this kind of get out of control this weekend. And I think if you go out and you beat Kansas State, a team that is a borderline top 25 team, then you go to BYU, which is probably one of the most forgiving series you can have in the Big 12 before a huge home series, the baseball version of the Red River Shootout against Texas in late April. That's going to be massive, and I think you can right the ship pretty quick. But they need this one this weekend, I think.
The big one this weekend in the Big 12 is UCF against West Virginia. UCF, which, as I mentioned, beat K-State last weekend. West Virginia now in first place in the Big 12. They swept Kansas in Lawrence. J.J. Weatherholt is back, and he looked great. And I can't attribute everything that happened this weekend to just having J.J. Weatherholt back in the lineup. But I will say that having him back in the lineup, I'm sure, felt really, really good for everyone there. He delivered on Friday night in his return. That is a real, like, difference maker. And, like, you can't ask for any any better player in the country than J.J. Weatherholt, really. And so for him to be back, for West Virginia to know that he'll be there the rest of the way, hopefully, kind of changes the complexion of things. And they now this weekend host UCF, which, you know, they're just 8-7 in the league. We've talked about this. They're number 5 in RPI. They have a real chance to host, but they need wins in conference play. They've been really fighting an uphill battle with that since opening weekend of Big 12 play when they got swept by Oklahoma. They haven't swept anyone to cancel that out. So they've just had to keep inching and clawing back into it. And, you know, I don't know how the committee will evaluate that. If UCF is still hanging around 500 by the end of the season, but has that RPI, I'll figure that out in May. But for now, this is a really big opportunity for West Virginia and for UCF.
100%. Also, as a quick aside, I've been trying to escape a leaf blower for almost the entirety of this podcast. The leaf blower is kicking my butt. I've run from end to end of my house twice, and I've been gassed, and I swear to God that this guy has a tracker on me and a thermal cam. He's just following me. So playing through that here today, but no, it's a huge series, and I think it's going to be a really fun one. And Weatherholt back, I think people may have forgotten with how this season has gone, with how well Travis Bazzana, Charlie Connan, and Jack Caglione have played, just how good J.J. Weatherholt is. He is, you know, there's an argument to be made that he is the best pure hitter in the country. I don't know if he's going to be the number one overall draft pick, but there's an argument to be made that he is the best pure hitter in the country. And the sigh of relief that lineup probably breathed and the coaching staff breathed when he came back and looked like that, I can't even imagine. He adds an immeasurable amount of talent and depth. And I give a lot of credit to West Virginia because they weathered the storm. No pun intended. They weathered the storm really well while he missed time. They had a couple of really nice series wins over Oklahoma, especially. And then you come back and you sweep. You've been kind of the conductor of the Kansas train dating back to last year even. But you go out and you sweep a really solid Kansas team. And I think that even outside of Weatherholt, you have some nice pieces in that lineup and on the pitching staff. Derek Clark, he missed the first part of the season. He was someone that I thought would be an X factor for the Mountaineers this year. You talk about an innings eater, and I mean, that guy fits it to a T. And he's gone out, I think he's thrown 3 straight complete games, most recently through a complete game shutout against Kansas. And he's a soft tossing little lefty. He attacks the zone. He throws nothing straight, throws strikes. He's a really good guy to have on Sundays. Aiden Major is the most prospecty one of the bunch. He's got big time stuff. He's a legit Friday night guy. David Hageman, you can deploy in a lot of roles. Max Yell has stepped up this year. It's a very dynamic team, and it's not one that I think anyone is going to be happy about drawing in June. And even outside of Weatherholt in that lineup, you've got Sam White, who's hit it well. Reed Chumley, Grant Hussey has big time left-handed power. Skylar King can run. Logan Swabey is now back from injury as well, and he had a huge 5-hit day last weekend. Anywhere you look, guys can hurt you, and it is a really, I think, it's a very fun team when looking at it. And then on the flip side with UCF, it's similar. It is not a super prospecty team. It is pitching first. Dominic Stagliano has thrown it really well. Ben Vespi's a nice arm. Dominic Castellano in the bullpen has been a huge piece for him. He threw 5 shutout innings this past weekend against Kansas State, I think, in that series clinching win. That was a massive series win. Like you mentioned, they have to start winning Big 12 games and Big 12 series if they want to achieve that hosting upside. And this weekend on the road is a golden opportunity to kind of put a little bit of a feather in their cap when it comes to their resume, because after this, they go into a really favorable stretch of schedule where they can really start to look good, both optically, record-wise, and then from a resume standpoint as well, and kind of start to firmly establish itself as a host. So like, I'm going to be keyed in on this series. Like, it's going to be one where I probably watch all three games in their entirety, or at least try to, because I think it's such a fun matchup. I kind of give the edge to West Virginia a little bit, even for as good as UCF has played. I think West Virginia is riding such a high and built up so much momentum last week, both with three impressive wins and getting Weatherholt back. Like, they're really feeling it right now. And I think that they go out and take 2 of 3.
I'm all in on the ears, as I've previously stated on this podcast and in print and like literally anywhere that I can say it. So yeah, I'll give West Virginia the edge this weekend. And look, I will also say that I don't think West Virginia's out of the hosting race. Now, that's a really hot take. It's the middle of April. A lot of teams aren't out of the hosting race, but if they win a couple games against RPI number 5 UCF this weekend, like, they are going to get on a rocket in terms of their RPI, and then we'll see. Like, I for a while, like, I probably said it on here even, that like, oh, the Big 12 is just going to have one host this year. And like, that was a bad read early in the season about like me being kind of down on the league because I couldn't figure it out. I'm now increasingly of the belief that they'll have two hosts and that they'll carve out a second host if they have to for the Big 12, that the committee is going to get in a room, look around and say like, you know, this league's really good and we don't quite understand why some of this RPI stuff hasn't quite worked out. Like, I think they're going to have a bunch of teams, you know, more 15 to 25 than 5 to 15. But I bet there are a couple hosts that come out of this league, whether that's that, you know, right now might be a little surprising, whether that's Oklahoma riding the ship, Oklahoma State getting an, you know, continuing on this hot stretch, or West Virginia. Something's going to happen here, I feel like. And it's such an interesting league. On the flip side of all these teams that are making things interesting on the hot side, Peter, TCU is 5-10 in Big 12 play. And this weekend they play Texas Tech in what is like kind of last chance for TCU, like, to show that this is not who they are. They just got swept at Cincinnati. They're home against Tech this weekend. Tech coming off of a big weekend of their own. You know, this is a fun series every year. I feel like it just this year it feels a whole lot different. And I like LSU, like Florida, like the TCU problems are the same ones that they've had. But getting swept at Cincinnati, like, really, like, that dragged me back into the what is wrong with TCU discussion.
Yeah, and you can't leave a weekend really ever feeling good about a sweep and spin zoning it at all. But when you go to they got swept in uninspiring fashion at Cincinnati too. Like, none of those three games were really in doubt. And like you said, the problems are the same. The lineup really just, I mean, it lacks a lot outside of Logan Maxwell and Chase Brunson, Anthony Silva, I guess, to an extent, and the pitching outside of Peyton Tully. It's unfortunate because leaving Omaha last year, I don't know where your head was at, but I felt really good about TCU going forward. Like, I felt it was a team that was ahead of schedule. They had a chance to get some nice pieces back. They were probably going to make a splash in the portal. They did with Tully. Like, it kind of felt like last year was just the start to a really good stretch. And it's unfortunate that these guys have taken a little bit of a step back. Because I do think the personnel group that they have is still an impressive one. And I think the only one on the pitching staff who has kind of stayed true is Ben Abelt. But outside of that, Cole Klecker has struggled. They just lack depth and firepower offensively. That's really, really hurt them both last weekend and really every weekend. Like, they just can't really hit.
They had like 2 or 3 freshman All-Americans last year. And so, yeah, coming out of Omaha, I was like, yeah, this is a team that, like, they went out, they got the experience, and now they're going to be back and they're going to be better. And like, it just has not worked out that way at all for them. And, you know, kind of fortunately for TCU, like, they've been able to fly a little bit under the radar because LSU and Wake and Florida were all ranked in front of them coming into this year and have had their own struggles. And they've like eaten up all of the oxygen, or much of the oxygen, about like what is going on with these like highly ranked preseason teams. And you know, TCU is in as much trouble as any of them, and frankly, more, arguably. Parity within the Big 12 and the struggles that TCU has had from the jump in Big 12 play just leads me, they're halfway through their Big 12 schedule. They have to flip it on its head. I don't think you can rely. It's been a long time since we've seen a 30-game Big 12 schedule. I've made this point before, so I don't know how the Big 12, a 14 and 16 Big 12 team is going to be evaluated by the selection committee. I don't know how 15 and 15 one even would be, but like, you at least have to win 9 or 10 games in the second half of the season to even make that a conversation. And it just, it's hard to feel good about them doing that right now at all. I still had them in the field as like the last team. Like, this is kind of the last chance though. If they don't do it this weekend, like, I am going to have no choice but to pull the plug on it.
I was going to say, I know that there were a 3 today in your field of 64, but I also know that you're very close to having them out. And like you said, this weekend feels like one that they got to win and try and build up some momentum, because last year they were in a lot different spot than they were this year when they went on that torrid stretch in late April through May and into June. But like, I mean, there's only so many weekends left and they got to do it. Like, they got to pick a time to do it if they're going to, and it feels like they kind of have to do it this weekend. But with Tech, they're a very sneaky 24-9, 8-7 in the Big 12. Like, they've flown a little bit under the radar. And like, as we go through and jump around the Big 12, like, it's a conference that I'm kind of more into than I was this like 3 weeks ago. Like, I think it's actually a really fun and deep conference, as opposed to like, oh, everyone's not very good and, you know, it's going to be hard. You just kind of have to hold your nose and like pick a host. Like, I think that there are a lot of really good clubs here. And with Tech, at least, it's kind of the classic Texas A&M team. They can really swing it. Like, you know, the depth in that lineup is what carries the load. Damian Bravo has had a breakout sophomore campaign to the tune of a 440 average. 22 extra base hits, including 18 doubles. Freshman shortstop TJ Pompey already looks the part of a big leaguer. He's 6'4", 210. He's really swung the bat well. And then the usual suspects have performed really well. And then on the pitching staff, unsurprisingly, it's been Kyle Robinson carrying the workload. And outside of him, it's just been a little bit of a struggle to get outs and miss bats. Josh Sanders has been really good. Parker Hutira has also been good. So they have a few nice pieces there, but it is certainly an offensive heavy team. And then with TCU, like, again, they do have a really tough stretch coming up. So this weekend feels a little bit like a must win for the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, it gets tougher from here for sure. Or continues to be tough, I guess, would be the more appropriate way to put it, because it hasn't been easy. And won't be easy this weekend. So there's your Big 12. We're going to take another quick break here, and then we'll finish up. We'll talk some ACC. We'll talk some Wake Forest. Are they back? Maybe a little Big East baseball again. So we'll be right back here in a second. But first, check this out. ACC wise, this week coming up is lighter. This last weekend was a fun one. You had UVA winning a series against UNC. That was a big one for the Hoos to bounce back quickly from what had been a tough week. And the Tar Heels came in as hot as anyone, and now they've lost 3 of 4 as they lost to South Carolina and Charlotte, like we said earlier in the podcast. But Peter, that was great. That also happened like almost a week ago, because that was a Thursday start. The series that really caught my eye over the weekend was Wake Forest going to Virginia Tech. And we had questions about Virginia Tech because of who they had played at the start of ACC play. But their record was really good. And here was an opportunity at home against a team that is talented. You know, Wake Forest has questions of its own, but they are nothing if not talented. And Virginia Tech did not answer their questions. Wake Forest comes in, they sweep the series on the road, and Nick Kurtz, like, we talked about how J.J. Weatherholt is back. Nick Kurtz came back like a week or so ago, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, I guess. But in the last week, Nick Kurtz has gone back to being Nick Kurtz, potential number one draft pick kind of Nick Kurtz. He has like 10 home runs. He has 10 home runs in his last seven games. 10 home runs in his last seven games. It's nuts. And you know, the thing about this weekend for Wake in Blacksburg was that nobody else really went crazy or had an outlandish, like, over the top weekend. Like mostly they just kind of did their thing. The bullpen was a lot better. Josh Hartle was a bit better, but like nobody else like really like stepped up and did crazy things. It was just that they did their job and Nick Kurtz went crazy and then they swept a series. And so that is kind of like a reminder that when your stars, like I talked about this plenty, that it was like the role players were doing their jobs. It was the stars weren't really living up to it for Wake. So kind of a reminder here that if Wake's stars play like up to their abilities, this team still looks like it has a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah, and they follow up a loud sweep on the road with a sound 12-3 win over Coastal Carolina yesterday. So they're really rolling here. Nick Kurtz, after yesterday's third inning home run or whatever the second home run he hit, he was 12 for his last 21 with 10 home runs, like a otherworldly stretch. And getting him back, and he's not going to be able to sustain that for the rest of the year. If he is, then God bless. But even just getting him back and consistently like driving the baseball, like getting Nick Kurtz back to Nick Kurtz form is so valuable for them. And then you look around the lineup as well, and like all of the role players have continued to really step up. Like Adam Tellier and Jack Winnay are still the team's two leading hitters, and Winnay actually is second on the team in RBIs and still tied for the team lead in home runs. Jake Reinisch has bounced back. Merrick Houston has started to swing it well this year. Seaver King, again, as dynamic a player as you'll find in the country, he's also started to swing it well recently. And you talk about, and you flip to the pitching staff, like Chase Burns goes out, and it was a little bit of a weird start for him because he allows 3 hits and 5 earned, due in large part to a rough third inning last weekend, but he strikes out a career high 15. He looked really good outside of one inning. Josh Hartle goes out and grinds through 4 2/3. He's still like a little inconsistent, and Michael Massey is still getting ramped up. But then the bullpen, like what has done them in, or what had did them in when they were going through these struggles and when the lows were really low for them, and I had gone on a tangent and multiple tangents about it, was free bases, both defensively and on the pitching staff, like wild pitches, walks, hit by pitches, just stuff optically that looks not polished and downright sloppy. And they've minimized that recently, and we've seen the results that it's warranted. And I think like Cole Rowland and Crawford Wade, like they add a lot of depth to the bullpen. They've been good since coming back, but other guys have stepped up and kind of hit their stride at the perfect time. Blake Morningstar is one. You look at the back of the baseball card and it's still not going to, like, you're not going to be blown away, but he has really improved as the season's gone on, and he's become a reliable option for them. William Ray is still someone. He gives you a unique angle from a sidearm slot. He's another one. Zach Johnson from the left side, he's also thrown the ball well. And you kind of start to see this team rounding into form at the perfect time. And like they've gone through their ups and downs this year, and it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. But if they can settle in right now and get rolling here, you know, we've mentioned the ceiling of this team a number of times, both in the preseason and then also in the first part of this year, and it's an Omaha like borderline national title type of team, especially this year when you're looking at the landscape of college baseball. There's not one team that I think is undefeated, like, or not undefeated, like is unbeatable, like last year with LSU and Wake. Like Arkansas has far and away the best pitching staff, and I think that they're comfortably the best team in America right now. But like, you know, with Wake, I think that they can go out and beat anyone, and they're going to, I think, keep building momentum this weekend as they go to BC, and then they've got a huge one next weekend home against Florida State. So I feel really good right now about the Deacs, and kind of the complete opposite is what I did coming out of their Easter weekend sweep against UNC.
Elsewhere this weekend, you mentioned with Wake going to BC, elsewhere we've got Virginia at Louisville. Louisville had a huge sweep of NC State last weekend, which kind of dramatically alters both of those teams, where they're at right now. Like, NC State has been just very up and down. That was a bad, bad result for them, obviously. It was really bad. Louisville had been just kind of an afterthought. Their RPI was north of 100 before that. And so that was a big one. And now Louisville gets Virginia at home. Now, Louisville did give back some of the goodness that they just picked up over the weekend with a dumb midweek loss. They lost to Western Kentucky. And look, Western Kentucky's good. They won a series against DBU last weekend, but that's still not a helpful situation given where Louisville had, what all the momentum that they had just built. So now they come home and they face Virginia this weekend. You've got Miami, which is coming off getting swept at Duke, 3 1-run losses for the Canes. Brutal stuff. The kind of stuff they've done to teams at Mark Light Field just got flipped on them, basically. They go to Florida State this weekend, and that, it's a really tough one, but Miami is just getting to a situation where they have to win some games. They're at 500 right now. And then NC State, coming off of that really tough sweep at Louisville, their reward is going to Clemson. So good luck with that. So some, like, it's hard to call these things must wins, but there are some real gut checks for some teams around the ACC this weekend.
Yeah, and I think just jumping around really quick, like, Louisville's RPI right now sits at 94, and like, their record optically, they're 22-12, I think, or 20-12, 6-6 in the ACC. They play really well at home, which plays in their favor this weekend. They're 18-5 at home, but they have UVA, and it's a really tough series, and their RPI, for lack of a better term, is kind of shot right now. And
quickly, to the next 3 weeks determine Louisville's season. It's home to Virginia, home and home midweeks with Kentucky because of an earlier rain out, at Miami, home against Clemson. Like, they have to survive that somehow. I don't know how many wins I'm saying they need to get out of this, but their RPI is going to get helped winning any of those games. But like, if they go sideways in that, it's going to be hard to pull out of it in the final 3 weeks of the year.
Yeah, 100%. It kind of feels like they need to pull a rabbit out of their hat with at least one series win there. I don't know how they do it. They do have some nice pieces, but I'm just not sure how they match up with any of those teams on paper. Miami, like you said before we hopped on here, like, they're 16-16, 6-9 in the ACC. I think that they're a good team, but at some point, like, you have to start putting points on the board. Like, you can't just be the team that's known for playing teams tough and eventually losing, because that gets you absolutely nowhere. So like, at Florida State, that's a really big one and a huge rivalry series where you can go out and get kind of your another marquee series win on top of that, and add a marquee series win to their resume on top of UNC and UVA. But right now, they're sitting in a little bit of a tough spot, out of the field of 64 as of your latest projection. I think the theme of the weekend is putting points on the board, because after this, you've got Louisville, Georgia Tech, and like, Miami can kind of get rolling here in these next few weeks. I just think that this weekend is incredibly important for them. And then with NC State, I think that they are who they are at this point. They've got some intriguing bats, as they always do. Alec Makarewicz is lighting the world on fire, and so is Garrett Pennington. I think Alec last night on Tuesday night against UNCW in their 5-4 loss, I think he went 4-for-5 with 4 home runs, or with 4 RBIs and 2 home runs. He's been carrying the load offensively, and they have some other, like, they have some nice bats, but it's not the deep and kind of scary NC State lineup that we've been accustomed to, at least recently. And then the pitching staff has been better than in years past, but it's still just a little bit of a bugaboo for the Wolfpack as it has been recently. Sam Heifel, it's been really nice to see his resurgence. Veteran right-hander Logan Whitaker has looked good at times. I think the one guy, though, that could have really taken this staff to the next level if he had built off his freshman year was Dom Fritton. Like, I had him circled as a big-time name to watch in the ACC, and he's unfortunately taken a step back, which has really hurt them. And they have, again, they've struggled in the bullpen outside of really Shane Van Dam and Jacob Duden. So, again, for NC State, they've now lost five straight dating back to last Tuesday against ECU, and they're in a really tough stretch here till the end of April with a series at Clemson, an always tough midweek against Campbell, and then a rivalry series at home against UNC. Like, they're a three seed right now, but really towing the line, and it feels like they got to win one of these next two series just to save face a little bit. So those are some other fun storylines around the conference.
Let's talk Big East baseball. This is a storyline that's been kind of like bubbling under the surface. Some people have talked about it around the country. I've been a little hesitant too, because, you know, yes, some of these teams have had really loud RPIs, but like sometimes that happens when teams go on the road a lot and fades down the stretch, and it still might happen to the Big East, but they're comfortably in conference play now. And as long as they don't take a bunch of dumb midweek losses, like, the Big East is just kind of gonna, like, they're probably baked in as a top 10 RPI conference. Right now they rank number 6. We don't have any of these teams ranked in the top 25. I kind of wanted to push Creighton in last week, and it wasn't quite the right situation to put Creighton in the top 25. But they're 25-5. They got a big series win last weekend, they've beaten Nebraska. Georgetown is like they are in first place right now, I guess, depending on how you look at things, but they're 5-1 in the Big East, 22-9 overall. They really don't lose weekend games hardly at all. They beat Maryland on Tuesday. St. John's, you know, is 22-5-1, owns a win against Florida to start the year. They are 3-0 in the Big East, but that 3-0 is against Villanova, and we're not going to talk about Villanova. UConn and Xavier played last weekend, and those two are both under 500 overall, but they both, we know what Xavier and UConn are about. They play impossible non-conference schedules, and that was a really big series win for UConn and a really tough series loss for Xavier, because with both of those teams coming in under 500 into conference play, like, they need strong Big East seasons if they're going to get into the at-large mix for UConn to to go out and get that series win to start. I thought was really significant, but it's kind of weird that, like, I'm saying, like, our at-large mix and everything with the Big East, but like, it seems more likely than not that one of these teams is going to get an at-large bid, and we're looking at a two-bid Big East, and it's been quite some time since we've done that. It used to happen a fair amount, like, not even going back to, I'm not asking us to go back 20 years to like when Virginia Tech was still in the league or something, but this is a league that I think on paper going forward should be a strong baseball league. You have UConn, you have Xavier, St. John's has a lot of history. Creighton is Creighton. Like, there's the pieces of it are here, and I've seen it for a few years. I've been waiting for it, and now it seems like it's happening. That this year is a great year for Big East baseball. And Peter, I didn't see it coming. It's not like they've got a bunch of draft prospects in the league this year. It's just a bunch of solid teams playing good baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really fun to watch. You kind of touched on all three of the teams and their resumes to this point, and St. John's and Creighton, like, they're on the verge of a potential top 25 ranking, TBD as to when/if it could happen. But with Creighton, like, 25-5 right now, 2-1 in the Big East. They have a series win at Stanford, which, I don't know, make of that one what you will. But I think for a team like Creighton to go to Palo Alto and notch a series win like that, even where it's a down year for Stanford, like, I think you can be, like, I think that's something to be really proud of, and especially, like, coming from the Big East. And all of these teams, like you mentioned, they're not super prospect-y. The two that really stand out to me, Jimmy Keenan, a 25 eligible at St. John's, catcher. He's been tearing the cover off the baseball. He's hitting over 370 with 20 extra base hits, 34 RBIs. And then Georgetown, they can really, really pitch it. I think they allowed one run last weekend against Seton Hall, and it could have been unearned. Pitching is the name of the game there. They have a couple of good bats, and Jake Hyde, Michael Azee is okay, Christian Fika. But outside of those two, it is all pitching. And Everett Catlett, a 6'7 left-hander, he's been outstanding for him. 2.6 ERA, 51 Ks to 19 walks and 47 innings. He's a really good arm. Like, I think he's a day two draft type of guy. And the depth on that pitching staff is outstanding. And I think that it's gone overlooked, but any of these teams in a regional setting, and I know that UConn, it's a little bit of a down year for the Huskies, but like St. John's, Georgetown, and Creighton, like Creighton probably, especially just given the well-roundedness of the team, that of the club that they have, I really would not want to see the Blue Jays in a regional setting. Like, I think that they could pose a lot of problems right now. And I know that both St. John's and Creighton are in the field of 64. And like, I think those would be really, really difficult draws. So it's been fun to watch. The Big East Conference Tournament is going to be, I think, one of the more underrated ones in the country. And it's going to be really fun to follow.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. This weekend, if you're interested, the Big East series to watch, I would say, is St. John's and UConn, just because, like, that, you know, there's some rivalry aspect to that. Like, that just feels a little more Big Easty. But I don't want to sleep on Creighton and Xavier, also a big one. Xavier at home this week, coming off of that series loss at UConn a week ago. They really have it would be big for them to use home field advantage this weekend and get something against the Blue Jays. So yeah, like, this is a conference worth watching. It's a little bit harder to watch. Like, they're not gotta really look for them in your streaming packages, but it can be worth the effort. Because they are some there's some good baseball being played in the Big East, and I just wanted to highlight that here as we hit the midpoint of the season. Elsewhere this weekend, going out west, Big West, you got UC Irvine against UC San Diego. UC Irvine coming off of the big series win against Santa Barbara last week. This week they go and they face the reigning Big West champs. Also, West Coast Conference, two best teams, Portland and San Diego, facing off. That's a really intriguing one. Should be some great pitching. I have both of those teams in the field right now. We'll see how long that holds for. That series, it's under the radar right now, but like, I think that could be a really fun one. And then in the pack, you have Oregon and suddenly resurgent USC. We talked about what they did to Oregon State a couple weeks ago. They've kept it going since then. It's a big hole to dig out of, but they're doing their best right now.
Yeah, a lot of fun series around the country. USC, it's like that Undertaker gif of him like coming out of the coffin. Like, they had that huge series win, or I guess modified series sweep at Oregon State, and then a 12-5 win on Tuesday over number 11, UC Irvine, a series sweep of Washington, a midweek win over UC San Diego. Like, right now they're 9-5 in a pretty wide open Pac-12 outside of Oregon State. So this is suddenly a really big series this weekend. And then in the Big West, I think Irvine, UC San Diego is a very slept on series, not necessarily for UC Irvine, because I think that, you know, they're nationally known and nationally recognized now as one of the best teams in college baseball, or at least ranked as such. But for UC San Diego, like, they're 21-9, 8-4 in the Big West. I like a lot of the pieces that they have. I mean, I think that it's going to be a difficult series for the Anteaters. I'm not going to pick against them, and I think that they're eventually going to come out of this weekend with a series win. But don't be surprised if it is highly, highly competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the UC San Diego, because they're new to Division One, and they just don't have a whole lot of name recognition right now, but they can really play. And like, there's a reason why they won the Big West last year. So some intriguing series out West as well, giving us a lot to talk about next week on our next edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So make sure you're subscribed. Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Hit that follow button. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. And you can read everything over at baseballamerica.com. There's the projected field. There's, you know, Peter will have a great rundown of what to watch this weekend later in the week. And I will have something about the Arkansas pitching staff online, hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, hopefully. As I say every week, I got some things to do, but it's a great time of year. So make sure you're, if you're not subscribed to Baseball America, it's a great time to jump in as minors, draft, college, everything is really rolling and underway as we get deeper into April. So with all of that, enjoy a great weekend of college baseball and look for us back here on the podcast feed next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, for Peter, I'm Teddy. Have a great weekend.
Matalan sale is now on. Save up to 50% off hundreds of styles right across the store, from women's and menswear to kids and home too. But hurry, it won't be around for long. Shop the sale in store, online at matalan.co.uk or via the app now.